Thanks for jumping on board tonight. We have all sorts of fire and brimstone planned for you this evening, so stick around. If you leave before the 3 hours are up, you are going to miss... Well, I'll just leave it at that. Oh, by the way, this hour is sponsored by Lonnie Clark. The message, keeping it lit... On April 20th. All right. Thanks, Lonnie. So, I am perusing the other day the May, June issue of Mother Jones. You know, they don't advertise with us, but do they advertise on our website? I don't know. I don't think so. But if you don't get Mother Jones, you are really leaving an important piece of journalism out of your reading list. So I'm reading Mother Jones, and there's an article in there, Bullied Pulpit. It's by David Corn, of course. Why the White House wasn't able to fight the Obamacare lie. Obamacare. Look, let's stipulate before I quote some of this to you that probably, I don't have to put the qualifier on it. All progressives are disappointed with what Barack Obama did and didn't do where it concerned the health system, the health insurance system in this country. Every single progressive and probably 95% of liberals. Having stipulated that, Obama did reshape the health insurance industry, for good or for ill. I mean, you take your pick. There are some things in the Health Reform Act that are positive. And as Krugman and Corn and a lot of people said from the very beginning, I think Krugman said it, it just simply didn't go far enough. I don't think Krugman said that at all. He's more on economics. But liberal or progressive pundits across the country in various media forms said that from the beginning. We said it on this program. Single-payer health care was what the country needed. Medicare for all. Very simple. And Obama did not deliver that. He didn't even push for it. He didn't even advocate for it. In fact, he took it one step further and denied including it even in the discussions. Okay, we stipulated all the negatives. Now, as David Corden writes, in the spring of 2009, about 2 years ago, as this big fight over Obama's health care proposal was beginning, Frank Luntz... A real scumball. I mean, he really is. He defines cockroach. Now, I'm not quoting David Corn here. I'm just picking phrases and sentences out of his article. Because I don't think Corn would use the phrase cockroach. I will, though. Frank Luntz is a cockroach. He's an infamous Republican consultant, is the way David Corn describes him, who specializes in the language of politics. Well, what Luntz did was drop a confidential 28-page report, you probably heard about this, for congressional Republicans on how they could confront and defeat Obama on the issue of health insurance reform. Luntz suggested that all the cockroaches and all the Republicans and all the baggers and all the freaks and all the people behind this madness, like the Koch family murder enterprise, they're trying to murder the country, that's why it's a murder enterprise, that they all use the term government takeover of health care. Government takeover of health care. And they did. Again and again. For the entire process that was described as a debate, but looked more, when you looked at the teabaggers, more like a bunch of spoiled little brat children who appeared 99% white, probably 75% overweight, and very, you know, just ignorant as hell, the teabaggers. But they bought it. Government takeover of healthcare. Oh, my God in heaven. Now, it was an absolute lie. No equivocation here. It wasn't a falsehood. It wasn't a waffling on the truth. It was an absolute lie. Obama's system relies on private insurance and the market. That's what it relies on in order to work, especially after he abandoned the public option. The public option was kind of a compromise for a while. Okay, I'm not even going to allow a discussion on single payer, but we'll have this thing called public option where we'll set up these insurance pools for people who either are turned down by insurance companies or don't want to go with insurance. They're going to come buy your insurance here. He abandoned that. So it was a system that relied on private insurance and the market, with a few additional government regulations. Woo! Regulations! Yeah! Oh, my God. PolitiFact.com, which is a fact-checking site operated by the St. Petersburg Times, declared Luntz's statement, government takeover of healthcare, to be the lie of the year of 2010. The lie of the year. They didn't call it a waffling statement or a misstatement. They called it what it was, an absolute lie, a lie of the year. But the line stuck, government takeover of health care. A Bloomberg poll conducted as Congress approved the legislation found that 53% of Americans believed it amounted to a government takeover of health care. Now, I have a point in all this. Just stay with me here. I know this is an old topic, right? Healthcare, goddamn Malloy, that was 2 years ago. Okay, just stay with me. Stay with me. A USA Today Gallup survey back then indicated that 65% thought the new law would expand government's role in healthcare too much. Government had no role in the new healthcare, except for a few regulations tacked on. Now, the Republicans lost the legislative war. So-called Obamacare became law. A lot of challenges against it right now in the courts, but it became the law. And had, you know, even though the Republicans lost the legislative war, they had, here's the word for you, Frank Luntz, the cockroach, Luntzified the debate and won the battle to define the health care measure through a big lie. Government takeover of health care! Oh, my God! Now, this was significant, the fact that they won that propaganda war. It was significant because of this. It established a foundation for the neo-fascists in this country, the Republicans and the teabaggers, their counterattacks, including the 2010 congressional elections, the ongoing effort to repeal or curtail the law, and the upcoming 2012 campaign. The teabaggers and the Koch brothers and these rich sons of bitches on the neo-fascist right who fund all this stuff with these astroturf organizations. Americans for sensible health care. You know, it's one guy working for the Koch brothers in a 100-square-foot office with a fax machine, a computer, and a phone somewhere in Washington, D.C. Americans for sensible health care is another lie. All of it's lies. The whole thing are lies. But the point was made. You can lie to the American public and the corrupt media in this country with few exceptions, will pick up the lie. It'll wind up on Google. It'll wind up on the search engines. And all of a sudden, the lie becomes truth. More on this in a second.
They put their faith and trust in God and corporations. They stand for piety that doesn't suffer rivals. They're waving flags and guns and quoting from the Bible. I hate Republicans. I hate Republicans. Baby, I can't stand those Republicans. I hate that old Republican Party.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So David Corn writing in the current issue of Mother Jones about the bullied pulpit, how Frank Luntz, a cockroach Republican teabag person who hates America and wants to destroy it, came up with the phrase government takeover of healthcare. And ordered all the other cockroaches to repeat it over and over and over again, which they did until finally people believed it. So as David Corden writes, okay, so what's a president to do? You know, and you're surrounded by lies, and you know they're lies, and you can't come out and look in the camera. I don't know why. I don't know why this is true. You can't come out and look in the camera and say, that's a lie. That's a filthy lie. I don't get that. Anyway, Corden says, actually, it's pretty basic. He quotes Anita Dunn, who was White House Communications Director in 2009. Anita Dunn says, quote, first you have to get as many of your own people as you can muster calling a lie a lie. Second, you try to get referees, like fact-checking organizations, to weigh in. And third, you got to keep doing it. End quote, Anita Dunn. Now, of course, the Obama administration and its defenders did all that. They went on cable shows, they did newspaper interviews, they tweeted, they Facebooked, and generally tried as former White House dude Burton puts it, to find every single avenue into America's living rooms. They cited PolitiFact and other independent sources confirming that the government takeover line was false. It was a lie. They kept at it for months, make that years, but they couldn't vanquish the lie. Anita Dunn recalls the day that Obama signed the health care measure into law. She was traveling in Florida and watching local TV. Before the signing ceremony, a local station did a long interview with a Republican congressman. And this dude warned of how horrible this government takeover of health care would be. He complained that taxes would go up, people would not be able to choose their doctors. Anita Dunn says, quote, we didn't have anything to counter that. The president has a pretty big bully pulpit, but you can't have him come out on an hourly basis saying it's not a government takeover. End quote. Of course, my question would be, why not? I don't think the president would have to come out every hour. But I think Obama doesn't need to mince words the way he does. And by mince words, I mean the literal mince, chop them up in little tiny pieces. You don't have to do that. Come on, Obama. This is a real world. You're an adult. You're dealing with psychopaths and sociopaths. Just come out. Order up some television time. Look in the camera and say, I'm sick of these goddamn sons of bitchin' Republicans lying about me. What would happen? Mark Twain is said to have once quipped, a lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes. That's even truer today. Anita Dunn notes, quote, there's this whole phenomenon of an internet fact. If something is not immediately and vigorously denied and is repeated over and over, it becomes a fact because it turns up on Google. End quote. Lanny Davis, who did damage control for the Clinton White House. Remember Lanny Davis, the one who tried his best to protect Clinton while Clinton was trying to figure out a way to get out of the lies that Monica had relieved him of his duties a few times. Anyway, Lanny Davis argues that, quote, search engines take misinformation and put it into an echo chamber. Trying to counter that is the functional equivalent of having your hair full of honey and bees and you're trying to whack the bees with your hands, end quote. I don't quite get that analogy, but okay, Lanny, I'll go for it. Lanny recalls an episode in the fall of 1997, pre-Google, but just as the internet was becoming a factor in political communications. He was working in the White House, a reporter for Insight. Remember that rag? A conservative magazine. I think it was put out by the Mooney freaks, the Washington Times. Anyway, a reporter for that rag approached him about a story alleging that Bill Clinton had arranged for dozens of friends and donors to be buried in Arlington National Cemetery, including a contributor who had served as U.S. ambassador to Switzerland. Ring a bell? Do you remember this scandal? Davis said he would check it out and get back to the reporter, and he contacted the Secretary of the Army. But the reporter, the right-wing cockroach from Insight, the Mooney publication, didn't wait. He posted the article, and it became a right-wing sensation. Woo! Conservative talk show hosts went wild! Remember Limbaugh on this one? I do. I was working at a station at the time that carried the Pigs program. Not just talk show hosts went wild. Republicans, including House Speaker Newt Gingrich, vowed an investigation. The story was locked in. Clinton had sold burial plots at Arlington National Cemetery. Son of a bitch! Forget Monica Lewinsky! Of course, they haven't discovered her yet. This was horrifying! Oh, my God! Of course, the only problem with it was another lie. More on that when we come back from the break. Stick around.
Years we've been together, seems we can't get along. No matter what I do, it don't appeal to you. Makes no difference whether I am right or I'm wrong. If we can't be sweethearts, there's much you can do. Please don't talk about me when I'm gone. Oh, honey, though our friendship ceases from now on. And listen, if you can't say anything real nice.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. What David Korn has written in the current issue of Mother Jones, entitled Bullied Pulpit, is especially pertinent given the fact that the 2012 election cycle has begun, and the lies are going to continue. Well, they're going to be, the multiplier is unknown right now, but the lies that are going to be put out there by the Republicans, the fascists, the teabaggers. I'm no big fan of Obama, but I really do think that elections should be decided by competition of ideas, solutions. And when it turns out that the person who won on the basis of promoting his or her ideas, and then we find out that that candidate, once that candidate becomes president, doesn't have the courage to act on the promises, as apparently Mr. Obama has proven himself, then, you know, you reassess and you wait for the next person who captures your attention. But it should be a contest of ideas, not lies on the one hand and half-truths or truths on the other. I don't think Obama lied about what he intended to do. I think once he won the office, he couldn't follow through. And you and I will never know why. We can take the simplistic approach, which I usually take on these matters, and say he lost his nerve. Or I don't believe that Obama is some kind of an evil person like Bush or Cheney or Nixon or you know, I just don't. And not because he's a Democrat. I don't care what identifier is after his name, political identifier. I don't believe he's an evil man. But he allowed us, like he said, you know, he's a blank slate. People can write on that slate anything they want to. That's kind of cheesy, but I digress. Lanny Davis recalls for David Corn in this article the incident where Bill Clinton was accused of selling grave sites in Arlington National Cemetery. Oh, my God. I remember when that story came out. And it was like, who would ever believe this guy? Well, who would? Newt Gingrich, Rush Limbaugh, all of them. Not that they necessarily believed it, but they wanted the dumbasses in the society to believe it. And the dumbasses did. The story was posted online by a cockroach who worked for the Mooney publication Insight. And it became Received Wisdom. In fact, it turned out, not only was it a complete lie, Clinton had recommended burial waivers for four people, including former Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall. None was a donor. And the ambassador in question was not among them. But it took Lanny Davis and the White House 2 days to start out the facts, and by then the story had gone global. Davis recalls, I was getting calls from around the world. We couldn't do anything at that point. Just make sure that the truth was written down somewhere for posterity, he says. You can't win in such a situation, Lanny Davis says. Quote, if you're lucky and do everything possible, maybe you get to a draw. And that's if you're very lucky, end quote. Now, earlier this year, after Representative Dan Lundgren, Republican from California, made a speech on the House floor, peeing all over the health care law, Representative Earl Blumenauer, a Democrat from Oregon, noted that PolitiFact, right, the research company owned by the St. Petersburg Times, PolitiFact had called the government takeover accusation the top lie of 2010. Dan Lundgren, the cockroach from California, interrupted and demanded that Blumenauer's comment be stricken from the record for impugning another member. A little fuss ensued on the House floor. The Republicans were essentially claiming that calling a lie was a lie. Now, how does all this reference the upcoming election cycle? Well, you're way ahead of me. You know damn good and well how it references the upcoming election cycle. Writing today in The Nation, Mark Ames and Mike Elk reveal that Koch Industries mailed a letter, letters, but a letter, form letter, to 50,000 employees, Koch Industries, 50,000 employees, instructing them on who to vote for in the 2010 midterms, instructing their employees. The Koch packet given to employees included candidate names, a letter from a Koch lobbyist, and a right-wing screed from the company, and the Washington Examiner, which is a publication owned by Phil Anschutz, a billionaire who is close to the Koch family. Now, corporate coercion of employees, as Think Progress puts it, is perhaps the most profound repercussion from the Supreme Court Citizens United decision last year. Remember that? The Nation magazine spoke to several law experts who noted that Citizens United, that decision, frees Koch Industries and other corporations to propagandize their employees with the boss's political preferences. Now, before Citizens United, businesses were prohibited from instructing their employees to vote a certain way. No longer. So not only was Koch active in pushing the Citizens United decision, several of the groups filing amicus briefs supporting unlimited corporate spending were funded by Koch. AstroTurf organizations. You know, the one guy in a 100-square-foot room with a phone, a fax machine, and computer sitting on K Street in Washington. He gets paid $50,000 a year to churn out the lies and be the cover for Citizens for Fairness Everywhere. That kind of place. Not only was Koch active in helping push the Citizens United decision, but Koch actively planned for exploiting the decision before it was even made. They knew what the Supreme Court, the cockroaches on the Supreme Court, they knew what they were going to rule. When Think Progress, or was it The Nation? I'm sorry, I guess The Nation. When they exposed a memo outlining the 2010 secret Koch political strategy meeting with fellow right-wing donors, The Nation, or Think Progress, sorry to be confused here, noted that the summit included a representative from Karl Kroh. Kroh is a Koch operative who had written a memo calling for corporations to exploit Citizens United decision and aggressively use, quote, employees, vendors, and customers, end quote, as tools for advancing the corporation's interests in the political sphere. Use everybody. And all you have to do is tell your employees, do this or your ass is fired. If we find out about it, do it. So Kroh predicts the Citizens United decision will correct the law's imbalance and open the door for businesses to educate their employees, vendors, and customers about candidates and office holders whose philosophies and voting records would destroy or permanently damage America's free enterprise system. Where have you heard that before? Jesus Christ, where have you heard that before, right? Now, for many nonprofits, the AstroTurf organizations, you know, the single guy in the room, blah, 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 the Citizens United decision creates just a host of new political opportunities in the 2010 elections and beyond. Under the ruling, trade associations like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and grassroots advocacy groups like Americans for Prosperity can now use general treasury funds from their contributions. These 501c groups can now use money in their general treasury to produce communications materials opposing or supporting specific candidates in legislation. Now, right now, Kroh is heading up a vast new Koch-funded project called Themis. Remember this, T-H-E-M-I-S, Themis. And it's designed to confuse, befuddle, lie to, destroy, in other words, corrupt the 2012 election cycle. I'll tell you something, Two Seekers, it's coming at you like a goddamn freight train. The lies and distortions. I don't know what they're going to come up with next, but it'll be a doozy. Now, the reason I wanted to share this with you is just preparation for what's coming. Everything's been kind of quiet, right, since the Health Reform Act. Screaming and yelling and all the lard-ass white people out there. Oh, God, where's he born? We don't want a government takeover of health care. Exactly as Frank Luntz instructed Limbaugh, Fox, Hannity, Beck, the Republicans, the governors, everybody, say it over and over again. Now, what is that process called? Well, Matt in St. Louis sent it to me. It's called psychic driving. Psychic driving. As Matt says, this is how Republicans employ their tactics on the population's mind. Psychic driving was developed by a psychiatrist who was promoted to the head of the World Psychiatric Association in the mid-20th century after publishing his work on the subject of his newly invented brainwashing and torture. Now, when we come back, I'll share with you from Wikipedia the definition. Stay with us.
is your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Hey, this hour is sponsored by Lonnie Clark, who is keeping it lit on April 20th. That would be today, Lonnie. Thanks, Lonnie. And you know what? Lonnie Clark sponsors the next hour, too. All right, Lonnie. Psychic driving. You need to know this stuff because of what's coming into our political system within the next several months. It's going to be an avalanche of lies, deception, a rampage of corruption that is going to leave most Americans completely confused because most Americans don't bother to do their own research. From Wikipedia, psychic driving was a psychiatric procedure in which patients were subjected to a continuously repeated message on a looped tape in order to alter their behavior. In psychic driving, patients were often exposed to hundreds of thousands of repetitions of a single statement over the course of their treatment. They were also concurrently administered muscular paralytic drugs, such as curare, in order to subdue them for the purpose of exposure to the looped message. The procedure was pioneered by one Dr. D. Ewan Cameron and utilized and funded by the U.S. CIA's MKUltra program in Canada. Similar techniques are alleged to have been used in the kidnapping and death of CIA operative William Buckley by Aziz al-Aboub, a student of Cameron's, in 1984 and 1985. What is alluded to there is that Cameron brainwashed the student into kidnapping and murdering William Francis Buckley. The topic of psychic driving is dealt with in some detail in the docudrama entitled The Sleep Room, which came out in 1998, directed by Ann Wheeler. It is also dramatized in the spy film The Ipcress File, where it is shown being used on Michael Caine, the actor. The psychic driving procedure was a chronological precursor to Cameron's depatterning, the latter involving massive doses of electroconvulsive therapy combined with similarly large doses of psychedelic drugs, such as LSD. The intent was to break down the subject's personality. Theoretically, psychic driving could then be used with some efficacy in establishing a new personality. Such biologically and psychologically devastating procedures, adopted internationally by the psychiatric establishment, were largely abolished by the time the CIA was brought before a Senate hearing in 1977 for its involvement and funding of Dr. D. Ewan Cameron's experimental activities as part of the MKUltra program. Psychic driving. The Nazis called it the big lie. Same thing. You repeat something often enough, and eventually you break down the resistance of someone to say, no, it's a lie. Now, if you were repeating it through massive media exposure, i.e. right-wing talk radio that nobody can escape from in this country unless you leave your radio off or stay away from the station, but 99%... Okay, 99.5% of talk radio is right-wing neo-fascist propaganda. You know who the drivers of that are. And then you couple it with Fox News or the Rupert Murdoch propaganda terrorist network. And then you add to the mix a refusal on the part of MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, and the rest of the over-the-air and cable networks to call these stories goddamn lies. Refusal. So what happens? Lies, like nature, hates a vacuum. Loves a vacuum, actually. If there is no resistance to the big lie, then the big lie becomes the big truth. Remember death panels? Jesus Christ. Death panels? How about Kenya? Obama's birthplace? What about the fact that he's a practicing Muslim? What about the Health Care Reform Act? Is a government takeover of health care. It just goes on and on and on. Remember the lies about John Kerry? Now, I'm telling you, all these techniques that were developed during the bad old Cold War by U.S. intelligence agencies like CIA, like the DIA, like all of these, and some British agencies too, MI5, brainwashing techniques developed by the North Koreans, i.e. the Manchurian Candidate was a good movie depiction of that. False? Probably. All of these techniques produce a result. They produce a result. Now the question, the only question I have for myself and for you, how do you resist this? What do you do? Nobody calls these lies what they are. God-damned lies. Nobody says that. And you're allowed to say that in media. You're allowed to go on television. You can go on ABC. You can go on NBC and say, that's a goddamn lie. You can say that. Who says it? Who does that? So you're going to have to do it for yourself. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. To mention an obituary today that, by the way, this hour is sponsored by Lonnie Clark. Again, he writes, for the sake of American ideals, I sponsor the Mike Malloy Show. May we all bring love, kindness, and gentle understanding to our activities. Will we defend our rights with ferocity? Well, I like that. May we all bring love, kindness, and gentle understanding to our activities while we defend our rights with ferocity. Lonnie Clark! Keeping it lit on 420, right, Lonnie? Here, try some of this. Lonnie Clark is our second hour sponsor tonight, too. All right, the obituary. Alan Blakeney died at the age of 85. He died Saturday at his home in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. Do you know who he was? If you're Canadian, you do. He was the health minister of the Canadian province of Saskatchewan who helped start North America's first tax-financed universal health care system back in 1962. In 62. This is the Canadian single-payer version of health care. Alan Blakeney. He was later Saskatchewan's premier. He died at his home on Saturday. He was 85. In 1946, I want you to know this. Just you Americans, Canadians already know. In 1946, the government of Tommy Douglas, who was then Saskatchewan's premier, enacted universal insurance coverage for hospitalization. Mr. Douglas's successor, a guy named Woodrow Lloyd, expanded the program in 1962 to include the cost of medical care provided by doctors. 9 out of 10 doctors responded in Canada by going on strike. People demonstrated in support of the doctors, and newspapers editorialized in their favor. Mr. Blakeney, the guy that died Saturday as the health minister in Woodrow Lloyd's government, became the main negotiator with the physicians. He succeeded in keeping the new system, partly by emphasizing its lower cost, but he compromised to give doctors the right to charge fees for services rather than going on salary. This is how it differs from the British system. I think the British system is still doctors are on salary. Anyway, Blakeney later called the brouhaha, quote, the greatest social conflict I was involved in, end quote. And by 1966, universal medical coverage had been extended to all Canadians. Opposition to the plan in Saskatchewan, however, helped the Liberal Party defeat Mr. Lloyd's government in 1964. Mr. Blakeney remained a member of the provincial legislature and practiced law, but by 1970 he had become leader of the provincial New Democratic Party, and he led it to victory the next year. As Saskatchewan's premier, I want you to hear this, a post he held until 1982, this guy, Alan Blakeney, put into effect a flurry of programs he called a New Deal for People. These included a dental program for children, a prescription drug program, subsidized housing, home care, and a guaranteed income supplement for the elderly poor. He helped pass a law to allow the government to purchase land from older farmers so it in turn could the government could rent the land back to the children, making it financially feasible for them to stay on the family homestead. Think about that for just a second, Americans or United States citizens. Think about it. Blakeney aggressively increased the fees charged by the province, Saskatchewan, for mining potash, a component of fertilizer, after foreign producers, largely from the United States, refused to pay. Mr. Blakeney's government seized the mines of the companies producing more than 40% of the province's potash. Both the companies and the United States government protested, but the action stood. So I just wanted to, Blakeney watched the debate on healthcare in the United States, if you want to call it a debate, which resulted in what the Republicans call Obamacare, but what is in fact called the Affordable Healthcare for America Act of 2009. He watched all that, and he called this law in the United States, quote, a painfully small step, end quote. Alan Blakeney, the guy who brought universal health care and coverage, single payer. And I ask you, has Canada sunk beneath the waves? Why, no. Has Canada gone bankrupt? No. Do Canadian citizens have guaranteed health care? Yes. I rest my case. Or I rest Mr. Blakeney's case. That obituary appeared in today's New York Times, in case you want to check it out yourself. 1962. And here we are in this dying empire where we spend $1 trillion a year now on weapons and death and destruction. And the neo-fascists tell you that Obamacare is a government takeover of healthcare. A government takeover of healthcare. A government takeover of healthcare. How much healthcare do you suppose could be funded with just half of our death budget? Jesus Christ, we're stupid, aren't we? Aren't we stupid? Huh? Aren't we stupid? Bradley Manning arrived at the Army's prison at Fort Leavenworth after spending the past 9 months at a Marine brig in Quantico, Virginia today. His transfer came amid claims from his lawyer and others that his confinement at Quantico amounted to torture. So all the protests, not just in the United States, not just down in Quantico, Virginia, but all over, the protests that occurred in Australia, the UK, Canada, the United States, all the attention focused. I mean, here was a kid, and he is a kid, he's 23, denied a conversation with Dennis Kucinich, a member of the United States Congress, denied a conversation with the torture representative from the United Nations, denied a conversation with Amnesty International, denied all of it for 9 months. And you know why? Well, the plan was to break him. You think he's broken? Marine officials claimed during the entire time he was tortured that the torture was necessary to prevent Manning from injuring himself. Son of a bitch. Don't you? I mean, when you hear that, don't you go berserk? Doesn't your mind just start to flip back to Winston Smith and the Ministry of Truth? And you just sit here and go, what? What? He was stripped naked. He was confined to a cell for 23 hours a day. He was kept awake constantly with lights and sound to prevent him from injuring himself? Ah, okay. Jay Johnson, the Pentagon's general counsel, said, quote, at the request of Private Manning's defense counsel, an assessment is underway to determine whether Private Manning is mentally competent in this case in the event it goes to trial. End quote. Do you understand what that sentence means? Clark is sponsoring this hour. He is. For the sake of American ideals, I sponsor the Mike Malloy Show. May we all bring love, kindness, and gentle understanding to our activities while we defend our rights with ferocity. The Pentagon's general counsel said about the move of Bradley Manning today, in a briefing yesterday, quote, at the request of Private Manning's defense counsel, an assessment is underway to determine whether Private Manning is mentally competent in this case in the event it goes to trial, end quote. He was mentally competent 9 months ago, wasn't he? Of course he was. Manning's defense attorney, David Coombs, said the timing of the move to Fort Leavenworth from the brig at Quantico was not a surprise. Attorney Coombs said, quote, the defense was in the process of filing a writ of habeas corpus, seeking a court ruling that the Quantico brig violated PFC Manning's constitutional right to due process, end quote. Coombs wrote that on his blog. He went on, while the defense hopes that the move to Fort Leavenworth will result in the improvement of PFC Manning's conditions of confinement, it nevertheless, the defense, intends to pursue redress at the appropriate time for the flagrant violations of his constitutional rights by the Quantico Confinement Facility, end quote. Remember last month, Obama said he had been assured by the Pentagon that Manning's treatment was appropriate. Pre-trial detention now equals torture. And Mr. President, do we have to assume that Mr. President didn't have a clue what was going on? Should we assume that? He is the commander-in-chief. He is the president of the United States. He has multitudes of aides who could dig up the ugly truth for him if he truly wanted it. But are we to believe that Barack Obama believed that the Pentagon's treatment of Manning was, quote, appropriate? Do we honestly believe that? Lieutenant Colonel Don Hilton, who is in charge of the medium security detention, he goes from solitary confinement to a medium security detention facility. Well, I guess the template for this was the treatment of Jose Padilla, or Jose Padilla, as his family insisted his last name should be pronounced. The treatment of Jose Padilla. Do you remember that? How long was he kept until he could not? What happened to that trial? And just as Padilla, on Padilla's behalf, there was a writ of habeas corpus to be filed in federal court. All of a sudden, the Bush crime family had it transferred from military authority to civilian authority. Remember that? If I got that right, is that what happened? Jose Padilla, whatever happened to him? Wasn't he the greatest threat to the freedom, life, and liberty of Americans since, I don't know, the War of 1812? Or who? Aaron Burr? Or Khrushchev? Stalin? Huh? What happened to Jose Padilla? What's going to happen to Bradley Manning? 9 months. Let me ask you something. Not you truth seekers, because I know the answer, but you right-wing trolls, you cockroaches who listen to this program. Could you have handled 90 minutes of what Bradley Manning went through? Lieutenant Colonel Don Hilton, who's in charge of the medium security detention facility at Leavenworth, said Manning will undergo a comprehensive evaluation to assess whether he is a risk to his own or others' safety. The 150 inmates at the facility, including 8 who are awaiting trial, as Bradley Manning will be, are allowed 3 hours of recreation a day, 3 meals a day in the dining area, and some unstructured time. Manning faces 24 charges, including aiding the enemy. Which enemy? The whole goddamn world is the enemy of the United States. Which enemy? They don't want to bring this kid to trial for obvious reasons. Now, granted, military trials are entirely different from civilian trials. Yeah, we all know that, don't we, huh? We lived through the Bush years, right? We all know that. I wonder if Obama's going to push to have him tried in a civilian court, in a federal court, not in a military court. What do you think? What do you think, truth seeker? But we all know, because we all have watched many, 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 many hours of court dramas on television, right? We know. Pre-trial discovery. What will they find out? You think the WikiLeaks documents expose the lies and deceptions and half-truths and untruths and garbage and filth that is distributed across the country's airwaves 24/7? You think WikiLeaks was revealing? What do you suppose would happen in pre-trial discovery? In the Bradley Manning case. We'll be right back.
another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Lonnie Clark. Lonnie Clark's message, along with his sponsorship. For the sake of American ideals, I sponsor the Mike Malloy Show. May we all bring love, kindness, and gentle understanding to our activities while we defend our rights with ferocity. Thank you, Lonnie. 2 hours from Lonnie Smith. I appreciate it very much. Michael and Roswell, regarding all the lying and the propagandizing and the deception, and hold on to your ass because it's really coming at us. It's going to start coming at us with the, the buildup to the 2012 campaign. Are you kidding me? Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, Pawlenty, the freak that used to be the governor from Arkansas. What's his name? I can never remember it. You know who I mean. Michael writes, I think it was some Soviet official in the waning Gorbachev years who said, quote, at least Soviet citizens know they are being propagandized. Americans don't even realize they are, end quote. Goebbels used to brag that the Nazis would win because, quote, our propaganda is superior to the propaganda of our enemies, end quote. Now, that might be perceived in hindsight as a foolish boast, but there's a small truth in it. Governments propagandize their citizens, and the only way that's recognized is if someone, as in Goebbels' case, advertises the fact. Or, if the propaganda is so blatant and unsophisticated that it can't be seen as anything but propaganda. Even the Bushes, who were hardly geniuses, had more than half the country believing that Saddam Hussein had or nearly had nuclear weapons, that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the attacks of 9/11, that Hussein could attack the United States at will with chemical and biological weapons released from drone aircraft. Those were all very big lies, repeated interminably, and the effect was exactly as Goering had described it 70 years earlier. To wit, quote, naturally, the common people don't want war, but after all, it is the leaders of a country who determine the policy, and it is always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in every country. End quote, Hermann Goering. Propaganda, Michael writes, works in direct proportionality to its repetition and its sophistication, its ability to be perceived as the truth. To think that we are exempt from it by virtue of living in a democracy is folly. Well, you know, I would go so far as to say that because we live in a democracy, we are going to be more exposed. In a totalitarian state, the propaganda comes from one source, doesn't it? In the waning days of the American Empire, the propaganda is going to come at us from numerous sources. A few weeks ago, Bernie Sanders released a list of the 10 companies that were cheating the American system the most out of legitimate taxes, their fair share in taxes. And the chart that was put together wound up on Facebook. So I got the chart today, and we'll probably post it within the next day or two at our website. Senator Bernie Sanders' Guide to Corporate Freeloaders. Number one, ExxonMobil. Their 2009 profits totaled $19 billion. Yet, according to its SEC filings, the company received a $156 million rebate from the IRS. Plus, it didn't pay any federal taxes. You, Truth Seeker, paid more taxes than ExxonMobil with your 2009 filing, if you paid $1. Number two, Bank of America. It made $4.4 billion in profits last year. This was after it received a $1 trillion bailout from the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department and a $1.9 billion tax refund from the IRS. Number three, General Electric. Them again. They have made $26 billion in profits in the United States over the past 5 years. It's also received a $4.1 billion tax refund, $4 billion tax refund from the IRS. GE has cut 20% of its American jobs in the past 9 years and is boosting jobs overseas where tax rates are lower and where it can continue evading U.S. taxes. Number four, Chevron. IRS refund last year totaled $19 million. But its profits in 2009 came to a whopping $10 billion. And it got a refund. Boeing. Boeing received a $30 billion contract from the Pentagon to build 179 airborne tankers. It also received a $124 million refund from the IRS. Valero Energy made $68 billion in sales and received a $167 million tax refund check from the IRS. Over the past 3 years, it has received $134 million tax break thanks to the oil and gas manufacturing tax reduction. Who owns Valero Energy? Is that the Koch brothers? No? Who is it? Doesn't matter. Goldman Sachs paid 1.1% of its 2008 income in taxes, yet it made a profit of $2.3 billion. And guess how much it received from the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury Department? $800 billion. Jesus Christ. Citigroup. Profits last year totaled more than $4 billion, but it paid $0 in federal income tax and received a $2.5 trillion. That's 2.5,000 billion. $2.5 trillion bailout from the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury. Number nine, ConocoPhillips. Their profits from 2007 through 2009 totaled $16 billion, but it was still awarded a $451 million in tax breaks because of the oil and gas manufacturing reduction. And finally, Carnival Cruise Lines. What? Carnival Cruise Lines made the top 10. $11 billion in profit over the past 4 years. Their taxes, 1.1%. God. But that's the way it should be. This is the way it operates in an oligarchy. We are so close to the Soviet system, kind of a hybridization of Stalinist Russia for the and Khrushchev's Russia for the bad part, and Putin's Russia and Medvedev's Russia for the profit that goes to the top handful of people. We are so close. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in the program regarding, remember we talked about Benton Harbor, the city that had been, that had its government removed by the governor of Michigan. I think we're going to talk about that next hour. Are we going to talk about that next hour? Okay. When you hear those numbers, I mean, what does that do anything to you? Does it mean anything? When you see the corporate parasites, the cockroaches, who bleed this country, whose financial situations are the reasons why children are being cut from the CHIPS program, children's health insurance programs, that the WIC program, women, infants, and children's and nutritional programs are being cut. The food stamps are being cut. It's because, and I could go right down the list, it's because of the predators who sit at the top of this filthy system, this rotten capitalist system. Now, you, Mr. Republican, who listens to this program because you can't believe your ears, how does this guy get on the radio? Let me ask you something. Do you think that's fair? Do you? Do you think it's okay for these corporations to punish the rest of Americans, including you, pal, or palette, so they can make billions in profit? You probably do, don't you? Sponsored by Lonnie Clark. Lonnie's message, for the sake of American ideals, I sponsor the Mike Malloy Show. May we all bring love and kindness and gentle understanding to our activities while we defend our rights with ferocity. Thank you, Lonnie. Clarification here, or not a clarification, a statement of fact after I muddied the waters. Thank God I have listeners who will take the time to correct things. Michael and Roswell, regarding the type of trial in Bradley Manning's case, because Manning is active military, the charges are based on his actions while on active duty. He is subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and therefore a military court-martial would be the proper venue rather than a civilian court. That court, however, the military court-martial, is a mile-wide difference from a military tribunal, which is what is being employed at Guantanamo. At least in a court governed by the rules of the UCMJ, he would have adequate opportunity for qualified counsel, opportunity to prepare his case, and to appeal any ruling to a higher court. None of these options is codified in the operating rules of a tribunal. Okay. My statement was, why doesn't Obama switch it to civilian court? Well, Mike, because because that's not the way it works when you are charged with a crime while you're in the military. Okay. And Reg at TVNewsLies.org, regarding Valero Energy, who made Bernie Sanders' top 10 list of companies that gouged the American public, literally, Valero Energy Corporation has been awarded, Reg writes, multiple multi-million dollar contracts by the U.S. Defense Energy Support Center, DESC, U.S. Defense Energy Support Center, to provide fuel to Israel. Really? Why defense contracts to provide fuel to Israel? I wonder why that is. Why doesn't ExxonMobil or British Petroleum... Well, never mind. I'm sure there's a reason. Right? What else? Very sad story out of Minnesota. I don't even know if I want to do it. Two eighth grade girls there in Lind, L-Y-N-D, Minnesota, fulfilled a suicide pact. They hanged themselves, leaving behind suicide notes telling their families that they love them. They were best friends, Haley Fentress and Paige Moravetz, both 14, discovered Saturday by Haley's mother. Haley's aunt said Haley had recently moved to the rural town of Lind, Minnesota, had complained to her family that she felt ostracized and bullied. Haley's aunt also said there are indications that the girls had planned their deaths for a long time, even including funeral details in a goodbye note. She told ABCnews.com, "I'm shocked and I'm mad and I'm sad. I don't understand the mentality of kids torturing other kids, kids having to go through this. They don't think they have anywhere to go." The aunt said that her niece Haley had been the victim of bullying after moving to Minnesota from Indiana with her mother and eight-year-old brother. The aunt said she was made fun of for being overweight and for her red hair. She posted on my Facebook wall that she really wanted to come back to Indiana, that the people were mean and cruel and she didn't fit in. Haley was not overweight, but she was so uncomfortable about her size that she rarely ate in public at school, according to the aunt. Paige, the other 14-year-old, was Haley's best friend, or closest friend. Paige's uncle said they were best friends. Haley started school here about a year ago, and over the course of the year, they'd become best friends. ABC sent some emails to the Marshall School District to get some confirmation on stuff and ask some questions. The emails were ignored. The girls died 3 days after... Now, this part is very unsettling to me. 3 days after... Paige's mother, Paige's mother and stepfather. And remember, Paige is 14. 3 days after Paige's mother and stepfather left for a 10-day vacation in Hawaii. Leave a 14-year-old alone? Maybe not alone. Maybe there were other people there. Sometime after 1 a.m. on Saturday, Haley left a Facebook post for her cousin Jessica wishing her a happy birthday. After leaving a post on her cousin's wall, Haley called her closest friend in Indiana. Her aunt said around 6 a.m., Haley's mother found the girls. The aunt said they did hang themselves. My sister found them. She's a medical assistant. She attempted to resuscitate them. The efforts to resuscitate failed. You can imagine what kind of bullying and taunting was directed at these two girls who found in each other some kind of comfort and solace from being the outsiders. You can just hear it, can't you? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back. It is 7 past the hour. My goodness, you're still here? Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. Oh, you're just tuning in. Well, however I get you, I've got you, right? Yeah. This hour is sponsored by George Tertarian. He has a message. This Sunday is not only Easter, it is April 24th. The last time April 24th fell on Easter Sunday was in 1915, when the Turkish government enacted their final solution and thus began the systematic genocide of their Armenian population. By 1918, 1.5 million out of a population of 2.5 million were dead. I am the grandson of survivors. George Tertarian. Whew. Yeah, that's a very, 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 very dark chapter in human history. George Tertarian is our sponsor for this hour. I had mentioned the other night about communist takeover of, and I'm talking about the, let me change it, the Stalinist takeover, because Stalin was not a communist, he was a psychopath, like so many heroes of the right are in these days. And Stalin definitely, although, you know, you won't hear his name spoken, he is the historical figure that so much on the right is being modeled upon. Stalin's collectivization. Even though the brain-dead morons rail against collectivism, take a look at Governor Rick Snyder, who has decided, with the permission of his legislature, his Politburo, to seize dictatorial powers where it concerns nullifying elections, removing school boards, removing any sort of public board or election decision that he feels should be removed. He started the process in Benton Harbor, Michigan. Now, I mentioned Benton Harbor a couple of nights ago, I think. Maybe it was last night. And mentioned the disparity between Benton Harbor and St. Joseph. I couldn't think of the name of the twins. They're twin cities. They're just I think there's a river that runs between them. Michael in Roswell writes in, making the situation of Benton Harbor even worse is the fact that the two cities sharing the river are almost perfectly segregated. The 8,500 residents of St. Joseph are almost 90% white, while the 11,000 residents of Benton Harbor are almost 90% black. Average income per capita in St. Joseph is over three times that of Benton Harbor, $30,000 a year versus $10,000 a year. Unemployment in St. Joseph is near the Michigan average, around 10%, while Benton Harbor is nearly double that. And what isn't being said commonly is that this takeover is likely for the purpose of selling off large parts of Benton Harbor at discount prices to developers wanting to develop the shoreline. See, it's unlike Michigan. Of course, that will mean some gentrification will also be necessary to drive rents up and force the undesirables out of the city. Why, of course. Nobody believes for a moment, do they, that anything the Stalinist Republicans do has anything to do with anything other than grinding and wringing and forcing as much profit as they can out of any situation, any given situation. It doesn't make any difference what the enterprise is. Anything from family planning to taking over cities to Social Security to teachers' unions. It doesn't matter. Under the guise of trying to right the wrongs perpetrated all those years ago by FDR, these thugs are destroying the country. Their real motive, of course, is privatizing everything, doing away with all regulations, and ending the planet and life on the planet as we know it as quickly as possible so that Jesus will be happy and blah, 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 blah. Sick bastards all. Gabby in Gresham, Oregon writes, Mike, at the beginning of your show last night, you mentioned all the wonderful jobs added by McDonald's. A few years ago, during the former enlightening administration of George W. Bush, this little article was in the paper. I thought it was so clever that I cut it out and taped it to my computer. The title of this little piece is Hamburgered. It's from Eagleville, Tennessee High School. The valedictorian a couple of years ago was a guy named Abraham Stoklasa. In his speech as valedictorian, he said, quote, "You have given us the minimum required attention and education that is needed to master any station at any McDonald's anywhere." That's what he said to the assembled faculty and staff of Eagleville, Tennessee High School. Now, after his speech, school officials there temporarily withheld his diploma. No, they don't like truth, Abraham, you know? Gabby writes, I wonder what took McDonald's so long to implement this education of the masses. This young man was ahead of his time, but not really, I guess. He evidently could read the handwriting on the wall. Gabby in Gresham, Oregon. Yeah, with the no child, no child left anywhere but behind, quote, educational, end quote, programs of the Bush crime family. Several members of the crime family, I mean the crime family, the blood crime family, the one spewed out on the earth by Barbara Bush. All the brothers are involved in fraud of some kind. But anyway, given the boundaries within which all of a sudden well-qualified teachers were forced to work, they weren't required to teach. They were denied the right to teach, to educate. They were taught to instruct. You may only instruct. You may not educate. Well, this kid, Abraham Stoklasa, Eagleville, Tennessee High School valedictorian, got it, didn't he? You have given us the minimum required attention and education that is needed to master any station at any McDonald's anywhere. And how did the principal and the staff, faculty respond? Well, probably not the faculty. The faculty probably agreed with him. But the school board, who makes these decisions? I guess the school board. Why, that little snot! Don't give him his diploma. That was according to Newsweek. Well, he finally got it. Texas. In a letter to President Obama requesting federal emergency assistance, Governor Rick Perry said that the fires, some of which had been burning for more than a week, threatened or had affected all but two of the 254 counties in Texas. Well, I'll be double dog damned. Really, Governor Rick? You're asking the Negro in the White House for assistance? Well, Lord have mercy. I thought you folks were just so into secession. I know we mentioned this last night, but this morning, boy, you made it into the NYT. You did indeed with your cheesy little request. Come on, you don't want help from President Barack Hussein Obama, the Kenyan. You don't want that, do you, Governor Rick? What's the matter, you crybaby bastard? Get your off your own ass. Get the Texas legislature out there and help those Texas firefighters. Either that or your entire state is going to burn up and go straight to hell. You know what I'm saying, Rick?
ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Yeah, Texas is just what I see this morning. It's burning from border to border. Burning from border to border. Texas has wildfires every spring. But according to the experts, nothing like this. Well, obviously, God is pissed off at Rick Perry. I mean, what? There's no other explanation. Right? I mean, isn't that what they're probably saying in the churches in Texas, that they have to impeach Rick Perry or God's going to burn up the whole damn state? Really? I mean, I hear that all the time when the right-wing preachers, but I repeat myself, in the Christian religion start, you know, demonizing one segment of the population and blaming them for some major catastrophe, right? You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Well, how about this one, reverends? Hey, all you Southern Baptists, what about this, huh? I mean, you talk about hell on earth. And remember what it said in the good book? Yeah, God said he would never destroy the world by water again. He would not. It would be by far. Well, it looks like far is just eating the hell out of Texas. And now Governor Rick Perry is, he sent a letter to President Obama. Please, sir, could you send us some emergency assistance from that filthy, dirty, rotten, Kenya-led, communist, socialist, teabag-hating government you run up there? We need the help. Your Honor, we really do. I'll come up there and shine your shoes, boy. I mean, Mr. President, I really will. Punk. Punk. Unbelievable. I can't seem to get away from that story. When you think about all the demonizing of the federal government that the people in the Republic of Texas established after they, you know, threw the Mexicans off their land. This is ours, goddammit! The Republic of Texas, after all the demonizing, all the nasty language, all the cutting remarks, all the hate-filled poison that they have pumped into the political discourse in this country that has come from Texas. And now this miserable bastard Rick Perry has the absolute audacity to send a letter to the President of the United States begging for assistance because, well, you know, our asses are burning up down here. Well, tell you what, Governor Rick, why don't you just fund some fire departments here real quick, all right? Come on. The Texas miracle and Texas this and Texas that. Didn't you lie through your damn teeth, Governor Rick, about how Texas had this great big old surplus? Turns out you have a great big old deficit, huh? See, this is what pisses your God off. You got a funky God. You got a God that will come down there and rip everybody new body orifices or burn them. Oh, I'm going on about this too long, I guess. All right. I can't stand these hypocritical scum suckers. I really can't. We hate the federal government. That is until our whole damn state catches fire. Speaking of Texas, in Houston, a kindergartner who brought a loaded gun to his Houston elementary school Tuesday. A loaded gun to his Houston elementary school Tuesday. Was among three students injured by fragments when it fired after falling from his pocket as he sat down for lunch. Happened about 11 a.m. at the Ross Elementary School cafeteria, spraying bullet fragments at the students, said Houston Independent School District Assistant Police Chief Robert Mock. Mock said, well, either some type of chips off the floor, or it could be pieces of the round that discharged. They had some cuts and stuff on their legs, but didn't appear to be life-threatening. Two six-year-old boys, including the one who had the gun, were wounded, said a spokesman. A five-year-old girl also suffered a foot injury. All three kids were taken to be checked out of the hospital. Upset parents rushed to the school where yellow crime scene tape was strung and more than a dozen Houston police and district patrol cars were parked outside as officers investigated where the boy got the gun.
Well, I have a suggestion where the boy got the gun. Probably from his house, right? And only three little kids injured. Well, hell, that's not bad. But just remember, guns don't injure kindergartners. Kindergartners injure kindergartners with gunfire. How are you going to stop it? How are you going to stop? Well, I'll tell you what. You know, they should have been in that, what's that program the NRA puts out there? Ronnie Rabbit or Roscoe, the roach person or whatever, about teaching little children how to handle a gun properly. You know what? That gun probably weighed more than the kindergartner did. But what the hell, man? It's Texas. And down here in Texas, we love our guns.
That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas, won't you anyway? So won't you let me help you, mister? Just pull your hat down the way I do. And buy your pants just a little longer. And next time somebody laughs at you, you just tell them you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas, won't you anyway? That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas, won't you anyway? That's right.
Liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
All right, welcome back. Twenty-five before the hour. This hour, again, is sponsored by George Tutarian, and his message is historical. He says, this Sunday is not only Easter, it is April 24th. The last time Easter Sunday and April 24th were together was in 1915, when the Turkish government enacted their final solution, and thus began the systematic genocide of their Armenian population. 3 years later, by 1918, 1.5 million out of a population of 2.5 million were dead. I am the grandson of survivors. George Tutarian sponsors this hour. Very few Americans know about the Armenian massacre. Last night, I realized I just bedeviled you, didn't I, with all that recitation about Ayn Rand and her her absolute love of a child murderer who dismembered one of his victims, a 12-year-old girl. And it was based on this character, Hickman. Was it George Hickman? I think it was George. Based on that character, Ayn Rand created her characters, Howard Roark, John Galt, the heroes of Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead. And Ayn Rand, you have to keep in mind, was a total sociopath. There is no debate about that. She was devoid, totally absent from her mind, her consciousness, was any kind of consideration that would include other people, community, harmony, balance, peace, love, generosity. These were weaknesses to her. She also was a screaming banshee where it concerned public assistance and all the programs designed in the 30s to assist Americans, you know, the so-called social safety net. And yet, as she was dying of lung cancer from all her cigarette smoking,
She got herself on Medicare and Social Security and other forms of government assistance in order to survive. So the hypocrisy is obvious and evident to anyone who wants to take a look. The problem is that the teabaggers, these white, self-satisfied grubs who display this utter contempt for their fellow human being, unless their fellow human being happens to be a member of their church or something, worship Ayn Rand's name. They don't know anything about her. Absolutely nothing. And then when you consider that, I know a lot of people think Ron Paul walks on water, the former libertarian who now identifies himself as a Republican, and his son, Rand Paul. And Rand Paul is not named after Ayn Rand. His name is Randall. But, you know, these two are the chief proponents of Randian psychosis in the U.S. Congress. But I will guarantee you that the teabaggers, like I said last night, you stop, go to the next teabag rally of these moronic, herd-like bag supporters and just tap one on the shoulder. Well, no, don't do that. They'll probably pull out a gun and shoot you. Make sure you have eye contact. That's it. That's the ticket. Make sure you have eye contact. Then walk up and say, hey, are you an Ayn Rand fan? Yeah! Tell me what her basic philosophy was. A, B, do you know the composite, you know, where she got the composite for the characters Howard Roark and John Galt? Who? Howard Roark and John Galt. Who? Uh-huh. Do you know anything about her? Yeah! Glenn Beck loves her! Me too! Try it. Go ahead, just try it. Just for clicks and giggles, just try it. I said clicks. Dave in Kentucky writes, Mike, just a short comment on Ayn Rand. Boiled down to her essentials, stripping her of her damn Socratic pretenses. She uses a number of silly word games and logical demonstrations to defend her foundational axioms, the flagship being that the highest human virtue is selfishness, the aggregate of which is apparently utopia. Anybody can propose and defend pretty much anything as an abstract proposition in an ahistorical, post-factual environment. My old philosophy 101 prof of yore used Ayn Rand as an example of this sophistry on stilts, he called it. Any proposition must be evaluated in terms of its mode of expression and the consequences of adopting, not merely on the internal consistency of its operational definitions. Huh? this is kind of dense. This is like reading political ponerology. Dave finishes up by saying, when the murderer she used as a model was caught, he didn't claim to be Superman. He pleaded insanity. As always, Dave in Kentucky. Thanks, Dave. When the murderer she used as a model for Howard Roark and John Galt was caught, he didn't claim to be Superman. He pleaded insanity. Why, of course. Ayn Rand, for Christ's sake. Prairie 2. One more brick, B-R-I-C, in the wall. One more brick. That stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and now South Africa. Brick. Brazil, Russia, India, China. Prairie 2 writes, gold spiked above $1,500 an ounce for the first time ever yesterday as the U.S. dollar began to weaken against the euro after strengthening yesterday in the wake of more attacks by Wall Street against Portugal's credit rating. Oil also continued to go up despite the continued surplus in the supply. China reacted with unease about Standard & Poor's suggesting it could downgrade the U.S. credit rating. Japan downplayed the significance of the report, as you might expect, since they have real problems. China has repeatedly complained that the U.S. is debasing the U.S. dollar in order to reduce what it owes to its creditors, with China estimated by the U.S. Treasury to be the largest creditor at about $1.2
dollars. China also holds more than $3 trillion in foreign currency, with perhaps $2 trillion in U.S. dollars. But this is all a state secret, and so nobody really knows. The U.S. has recently increased dramatically its estimate of China's ownership of U.S. treasuries based on surveys of known holders of U.S. bonds. China uses multiple front operations to mask what it does in the financial markets and has been believed to be selling large numbers of U.S. bonds. China doesn't ever expect to see the trillions that we owe them, as they know full well this was never real money. China just doesn't want their mushrooming empire hindered by the collapse of the American empire. And to that end, they hosted a meeting of the BRIC countries last week. This is, well, actually, BRICS. This is Brazil, Russia, China, India, and South Africa, which just became the newest member of this economic alliance. With almost 3 billion people, a quarter of the world's landmass, and a GDP larger than the U.S., they are an economic force to deal with, the BRICS. China is, of course, the dominant player, and they decided that South Africa would join the club, and this will give China even more influence on the African continent. The big news from this latest meeting is that they will no longer use the U.S. dollar in trade between the Big Five, the BRICS, but will use their own currencies instead. This news, if even noticed by conservatives, will doubtless result in, "Nah, look at all the dollars they hold. They need us." They need us for what, exactly? We don't export anything that the BRICS countries don't already have plenty of, and they have a big chunk of the world's gold bullion in their vaults to back their currencies. They also have more nukes between them than we have, just in case President Trump wants to start flexing his muscles to take oil away from the countries that supply the BRICS. Perhaps Vice President Palin, with all her experience seeing Russia from her house, will advise him not to do that. PrairieNumeral2.com. Go to his website and check it out. Yeah, what did Donald Trump say the other day where it concerns Libya? Sounds like Ann Coulter, doesn't he? Trump says, just invade the goddamn country and take their oil. Just invade them. Yeah. That's the ticket. Invade them. Take their oil, like the Bush crime family did where it concerns Iraq. We shall return. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by George Tertarian, and his message is the following. This Sunday is not only Easter, it is April 24th. The last time April 24th fell on Easter Sunday was in 1915, when the Turkish government enacted their final solution and thus began the systematic genocide of their Armenian population. By 1918, 1.5 million out of a population of 2.5 million were dead. I am the grandson of survivors. George Tertarian is our sponsor. And I'm sorry, George, that the sponsorship is under those kinds of conditions, but I appreciate the political message and the sponsorship. Thank you. Have you all heard the blueberry story yet? Here it is. This is Jamie Robert Vollmer. Quote, if I ran my business the way you people operate your schools, I wouldn't be in business very long. I stood before an auditorium filled with outraged teachers who were becoming angrier by the minute. My speech had entirely consumed their precious 90 minutes of in-service. Their initial icy glares had turned to restless agitation. You could cut the hostility with a knife. I represented a group of business people dedicated to improving public schools. I was an executive at an ice cream company that became famous in the middle 1980s when People magazine chose our blueberry as the best ice cream in America. I was convinced of two things. First, public schools needed to change. They were archaic. Selecting and sorting mechanisms designed for the industrial age and out of step with the needs of our emerging knowledge society. Second, educators were a major part of the problem. They resisted change, hunkered down in their feathered nest, protected by tenure and shielded by a bureaucratic monopoly. They needed to look for business. They needed to look to business. We know how to produce quality. Zero defects. Continuous improvement. In retrospect, the speech was perfectly balanced, equal parts ignorance and arrogance. As soon as I finished, a woman's hand shot up. She appeared polite, pleasant. She was, in fact, a razor-edged veteran high school English teacher who had been waiting to unload. She began quietly. We are told, sir, that you manage a company that makes good ice cream. I smugly replied, best ice cream in America, ma'am. How nice, she said. Is it rich and smooth? 16% butterfat, I crowed. Premium ingredients? She inquired. Super premium, nothing but AAA. I was on a roll. I never saw the next line coming. Mr. Vollmer, she said, leaning forward with a wicked eyebrow raised to the sky, when you are standing on your receiving dock and you see an inferior shipment of blueberries arrive, what do you do? In the silence of that room, I could hear the trap snap. I was dead meat, but I wasn't going to lie. I send them back. That's right, she said, and we can never send back our blueberries. We take them, big, small, rich, poor, gifted, exceptional, abused, frightened, confident, homeless, rude, and brilliant. We take them all, GT, ADHD, ADD, SLD, MMR, OHI, TBI, DD, autistic, junior rheumatoid arthritis, English as their second language, etc. We take them all, everyone. And that, Mr. Vollmer, is why it's not a business, it's a school. In an explosion, all 290 teachers, principals, bus drivers, aides, custodians, and secretaries jumped to their feet and yelled, yeah! Blueberries! Blueberries! And so began my long transformation. Since then, I have visited hundreds of schools. I have learned that a school is not a business. Schools are unable to control the quality of their raw material. They are dependent upon the vagaries of politics for a reliable revenue stream, and they are constantly mauled by a howling horde of disparate competing customer groups that would send the best CEO screaming into the night. None of this negates the need for change. We must change what, when, and how we teach to give all children maximum opportunity to thrive in a post-industrial society. But educators cannot do this alone. These changes can occur only with the understanding, trust, permission, and active support of the surrounding community. For the most important thing I have learned is that schools reflect the attitudes, beliefs, and health of the community they serve. And therefore, education means more than changing our schools. It means changing America. The aim of education should be to teach the child to think, not what to think. Jamie Robert Vollmer. That was appealing to me, that little vignette, that little story, because how many times have you heard the swine in this country, the ones who are destroying it, refer to everything as running it as a business? Remember what Bush and Cheney said they were going to do? The grown-ups were coming. They were going to run America as a business. How's that working out for you, Mr. and Miss Middle Class Republican? How'd that work out for you, running America as a business? They ran America as a crime syndicate. Let me repeat that. Every major, massive corporation
in finance, energy, military, industrial complex business, every single one of them is a criminal enterprise. All of them. Pharmaceutical industry, health insurance industry, every single one of them is run as a criminal enterprise. The question is not, is that true, Mike? The question is, what are we going to do about it? How much longer will we, the American people, those of us who can still think, how much longer will we allow this to continue before we discard a system that no longer works, in fact, is destroying the entire planet, and replace it with a system that does work? How much longer? The second question is, how much time left do we have to make that change? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.